Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we speak with writers about writing. Once in a while, I get a big superstar headlining author on the show, and I have one of those today. I'm so excited. CJ Box is here with me. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, I'm just honored that you had the time to speak with me, and it's just a thrill to have you. For the four people that have not heard of you, CJ Box is the author of 24 Joe Pickett novels, eight standalone novels, and a story collection. He has won the Edgar, the Anthony, Mukhavity, Gumshoe, and two Barry Awards, as well as the French Prix Calibre .38. That sounds like the Western Heritage Award for Literature and two Spur Awards. And I'm sure since this has been written 5 minutes ago, there's been more awards added to that list. They're
There
coming in
haven't
day,
been.
they're coming in daily, I think. They're an avid outdoorsman, Box has hunted, fished, hiked, ridden, and skied through Wyoming and the Mountain West. Those are all things I enjoy watching people on TV do and in movies. No, I'd last 5 minutes out there. He has been executive producer on shows based on his books, including ABC TV's Big Sky and Joe Pickett on Paramount Plus. And that's awesome too. So welcome to the show once again, CJ.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks again. So your newest book is called 3-Inch Teeth, and it's coming out imminently. So that's great. So
That's
can you tell
right.
us, and can you tell us a little bit about that? What's the elevator pitch on this on the latest?
Oh, I've always been kind of bad with elevator pitches, but the 3-inch teeth relates exactly with a grizzly bear. And grizzly bear attacks, and that's one of the biggest parts of the next book. Grizzly bears in the Mountain West have proliferated in the last 10 years, and in the last 5 years or so, there have been more and more grizzly human encounters occurring, especially in Wyoming, and several fatalities, maulings, attacks. And I became very interested in the subject matter because as mentioned, I'm an outdoors person. I'm a hunter. And when I first started hunting elk, for example, as a youngster, grizzly bears weren't even a consideration. But now there are pretty big areas in the northwest part of our state around Yellowstone Park, Jackson Hole, Cody, Dubois, where hunters, there are certain areas that hunters will simply not go anymore because there have been so many grizzly bear attacks. For the most part, those grizzly bear attacks can be attributed up to provocations, whether intentional or not. For example, somebody walking between a sow and her cubs, or just simply, being in the wrong place at the wrong time, not having bear spray, not being cautious. But in a few instances, especially in the last few years, there have been unprovoked grizzly bear attacks. And that, of course, got the attention of me and a lot of people who spend time outdoors because the prospect of a 350 to 400 pound animal with 3-inch teeth coming at you with the speed of a freight train is pretty frightening.
And probably one of the reasons 715 I don't go outside. I'm just kidding. No, they're scary, and they're I don't know what choice you have at that. I mean, I know there's tactics and ways to not be eaten, but I think freezing is one that I could probably do that. Probably freeze.
That's what grizzly bear experts will say. One of two things: either make a lot of noise and jump around, or freeze into a ball. And I always think if I was ever came in that situation, which one would I do? I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably a play it by ear sort of thing, what you feel like doing at the moment.
Yep.
Maybe they'd be afraid if you peed your pants, which I probably would do too. Maybe that's a bear deterrent if you pee
Maybe.
your pants. Maybe I'll try it. Okay, this is the 24th Joe Pickett book. And you've been on all the bestseller lists. So this is the 24th book. So my first official question. How has writing the character of Joe evolved for you over the course of 24 books? I went on your site, and it was like 2001, 2002, like one thing. It's been 1 year basically. So,
Right.
how has that evolved for you?
Well, when I first started out, I had no intention of writing a series. I didn't start out with, the world is waiting for a Wyoming Game Warden series, and I'm the guy that can do that. It was a book. It's called Open Season. It was acquired by Martha Butko, who you mentioned earlier, my first editor. And when the contract came for the book, it was contingent on two other books with Joe Pickett. So therefore, the series was born then. And over the years, it's worked out pretty well that the foundation established in that first book still lasts me to this day. So I'm very grateful for that. Making Joe Pickett a game warden, dealing with contemporary issues in the West and controversies and, contemporary themes, although it's set in the West and also had, lots of callbacks to the frontier West in these things, is right up my alley. I was never strategic about planning a long series, but I'm grateful that each book has been set in real time. So over the years, Joe Pickett has gone from the first book, he was 32 years old with a young family. Now he's 51. The kids have left the nest. He's, he and his wife are empty nesters now. So the situations have kind of changed. The kids have gone off to different careers and interests. And that's been fun to basically have this family grow up in front of your eyes through a book series. And I know that a lot of readers enjoy that part of it. Although, like I said, it was never planned or strategic. It was just simply a matter of me being a reader too and having problems with book long series where all of the characters never seem to age or change from book to book. And you have to suspend disbelief to such a degree with these kind of series that I always think that's a bridge too far. So by aging everyone and having them change and mature, has kept that series interesting to me, and I hope to readers.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it goes, you go through all the stages of life, and they don't announce themselves. You just suddenly find yourself. Oh, now I'm an empty nester. The inevitable things are coming, but it's kind of cool to grow within those moments, and you have a character that's growing. And I know what you mean about those long running. All right, here's book 30, and everyone is still 30.
So, mm-hmm, right.
A little weird. Now everyone has cell phones, but no one has aged. And that's how that is odd. That is odd. Well, good job there. I like how you, especially in this book, I like how you sort of, to me, there seemed like a theme between like violence from animals and violence with men. And there's a correlation between the two. Was that a theme you lean into only in this book or all the books? Or had tell us about that, that theme you work on.
I think it's an ongoing theme throughout all of the books. I write about the outdoors and about nature and about animals and about predators, human predators and wild predators. And, from the point of view that it's, nature is very amoral. There's no Bambis out there. There's no triumphant, wonderful animals. They're all just doing their own thing. The danger certainly exists for anybody out in the wild. But at the same time, it's not, animals aren't people. They don't have the same feelings and motivations. And, people out there who think that way or understand that generally get along a little better. And in this case, in this book, there are definitely grizzly bear attacks by a rogue grizzly bear. And Joe Pickett, our hero, teams up with the predator attack teams, something that really exists in Wyoming, to go out and neutralize this bear who's killing people for no good reason. And but at the same time, a guy out of Joe's past who wants revenge on Joe Pickett, as well as a list of people he has tattooed on his skin in prison, uses those grizzly bear attacks to go through that list. So lots going on, and Joe Pickett and the predator attack team don't have any idea for a long time that someone is using the bear attacks as cover to do their own thing.
Yeah. And that's not a spoiler, because that's in the description, that's in the, so that's very you know, it brought me like a Cape Fear sort of vibe. Like this dude is real mad, and he's got this revenge list coming out, and that is awesome. I mean, that's what I would try to do. I try to find a thing that's already happening and make it look like that crime. You know, that's perfect way to be a criminal, seems to me. Not that I'm trying to do that. No one arrest me. I'm not doing anything like that we know of. So you brought up the team. There's people in real life in the book, and I'm sure you've researched this, that they go out and try to neutralize these animals that have sort of gone rogue. And I always find that interesting because, you know, me as a city person, I'm like, well, that's the bear's house that you're in when the bear attacks you. Like, you're in their neighborhood, so you're taking that chance. But then there are, I guess, animals that they need to take out. So how do they know the difference between a bear just acting like a bear or a rogue bear that's going mad?
Sure, decisions are made conditionally. Even the people on who I consulted with, the people who make up like the predator attack team in Wyoming, it's almost like a SWAT team but for animals. They get no joy or pleasure in killing bears. They would prefer not to. In some cases, they're able to trap them and relocate them, but it has to do with the circumstances of the encounter with humans. If it like we talked about earlier, if someone accidentally walks between a sow and a cub and is attacked, well, that's not a killer predator bear. That's a mother taking care of her kids. So that bear would more likely be relocated. But if a bear comes charging out of the woods, hitting somebody who didn't do anything to provoke that bear, then that bear might do that again. So that bear has to be taken out, and that's what happens. In real life, there's been circumstances where, in one case, a well-armed hunter guide, elk hunting guide, was attacked by two bears unprovoked that just came charging out of the woods and took him down, even though he sprayed him with bear spray and went for his guns. So when that sort of thing happens, those bears are conditioned to act not normally like real bears, but as something else.
Almost like they're rabid or something. That's, you know, the like a rabid behavior. Is there bear rabies? Do bears get rabies? Or we don't know.
Not that I'm aware of, but in that particular case, which really happened, the bears actually attacked the helicopter that landed at the fatality, and the predator attack team had never seen behavior like that. They cut off the head of the female bear after they killed it to see if maybe there was a brain tumor or something weird about that. And it turns out there wasn't. The head of the, this is a weird, great story. The head of the bear was so coated with bear spray that the pilot of the helicopter could barely fly it. So the bear was sprayed with bear spray and still attacked. And when that sort of thing happens, it's kind of unexplainable to bear biologists and behavioralists.
Wow. So that's fascinating. So maybe the first couple of serial killer bears we were neutralized, or
Right.
they were like radiated bears from like a science. That's your next book, sci-fi story. There's, you know, aliens came down and radiated these bears, and they're trying to take out humans or something like that. That's all joking aside. That is a sad story, but it's interesting that that was some kind of aberration.
Right.
Fascinating. And that there were two of them. That's also weird. Wow. Interesting. So, speaking of mama bears, because we all that's a thing for humans. That, you know, you're on the playground and some little kid, bigger kid comes up and makes fun of your little kid, your mama bear thing steps in. But in your book, you have mama bears that are different than that. So what is this phenomenon? Explain a little bit about who they are in the book, and then what is this? Is this a real thing that people do?
Well, there's not a real group called Mama Bears. I made that up, but there certainly are activists, animal lovers. They're well-meaning usually, who, and I'm always mess this word up, who think of animals as having human feelings and attribute human characteristics to animals. And in this case, there are people who become so familiar with bears that they name them. They think they know their history. They think they know how they'll behave. Sometimes they're right. But in this case, there's some activists who arrive at the scene of the grizzly bear death and try to thwart the predator attack team from taking out the bear because they want to save the bear. Bear's more important to them than the human victims. that's based on real people who do that and who in some cases become more of a problem to the officials trying to take care of the bear than the bear itself. So yeah, they exist. And like I said, they're generally well-meaning, but it's a real ethical kind of moral dilemma to deal with when people know the bears so well that they name them and watch them and see how many cubs they have. And there are famous bears in Yellowstone Park now where everybody can't wait for them to come out every year, and they know who they are and they see them. And if something bad would happen to them, that would make a lot of people upset.
Yeah. People do tend to I don't know. I don't know that word either, but personalized, they put human traits onto animal. And there's some people like animals more than people. And I always find that very confusing. Okay. So what does separate animals from human? Cause you've mentioned it a couple times. Animals don't have human emotions and feeling. Do you think they feel love? Is it just like food, survival, sex, sleep? Do they have any emotion, do you think?
I think that's kind of that's beyond my pay grade to answer that question, other than to say that there have been bears in real life where traumatic things have happened to them, or in one case in particular, to a bear's three cubs, who were all hit by a car, and that mama bear went crazy. I actually witnessed that bear. I saw that bear as I drove through Yellowstone Park one morning at 6:30, and I didn't know the backstory. All I knew is I could see a bear running as fast as my car alongside the road, knocking down trees and acting insane. Later, I talked to a bear biologist who said, I can't remember the number, but it's something like, oh yeah, that's 199. She lost all of her cubs this spring. And that was kind of the impetus of this entire book.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad I asked it then, because I don't know the answer either, but that's fascinating. I do think there is some kind of instinctual grief. Grief is instinctual. There's certain emotions that are so base, I think they're just instincts. We'll have to figure that out for the next time.
Right.
You did great. Okay, cool. So you're extreme. This is already question five. I can't believe it. But you're so accomplished. You've achieved so much. You've been around a long time. And you've advanced as your character has. If you could go back and tell your younger writing self anything, what would it be?
Wow, tough question. I think stick with your instincts of what as a writer, don't try to chase the market. Kind of create your own unique lane and stay in it. Those things have happened with me, and the readership has come to me as opposed to me chasing the readers. And I've been very lucky in that way. I've never planned anything strategically. It's just sort of happened. And the feedback I get at book signings and so on is that readers tend to like that approach. I have a lot of men readers for the mystery world, but the readership is actually 51% women, which is it's interesting. I was telling my publishers for years, it's at the book signings, it would be 50-50 men and women, husbands and wives, fathers and daughters, moms and sons. And I thought that was quite unusual. And they did too. And they didn't really believe me until they did some focus groups on readership and found out it was exactly like that, across different ages, and young people and older people and men and women. So there's something in the books that luckily attracts a lot of readers that I don't even know what it all is, but I'm trying to stick with that formula.
Well, no, that's the best advice. And I think you just said it very well, because you've chose your lane. You love this character. You've developed him over time, and you put a lot of passion into the books. And I think that's what people are responding to. But yeah, it was funny, because I just had Nick Petrie on this a couple episodes ago.
Oh yeah, I know Nick.
Yeah, he said nice things about you, and he said he has more women than men readers. And we were just mentioning, because which is great. And it shouldn't be that, oh, this is a man's book, this is a woman's book. It's a good book, you know, and that's why he said, he was sort of, his publishers were surprised. But yeah, he says it's like 60-40 women, and he writes the male character, and it's PTSD, and it's, but yeah, it's interesting. It's cool that you have all the audiences, because it's, and I said to him, it's because it's good. That's why. There's no
Well,
other reason.
and I think as a writer, if you try to do that or try to chase that or say, I'm just going to write about kick-ass women and women will love this, I think we both know that rarely works. And it's obvious what the author's trying to do.
Yeah, it has to come from within out, and that's the magnetic pull. It's not the outward pulling in, it's the inward out. Yeah. Awesome. Well, you're both kicking it and killing it, so that's great. All right, I got to give you the quiz. You have to do it. It's a 5-question rapid fire quiz. It's very hard. All right,
So
number
there's
one.
actually 10 questions instead of 5 in this thing. Okay.
Yeah, you can tell your publicist that we lied. Number one, do you prefer reading standalone novels or series?
I don't mean to hedge, but I mean I read both. I love long-standing good series that stand up. So many series I've abandoned because I feel like I'm reading the same book every time, but I read standalones, of course, too. So it just depends on the book. I'm very dedicated to a few series, but I try to read as many standalones as I can.
Yeah, great. You're allowed to cheat. You don't have to do. You can cheat the whole way through the quiz. It's fine. I just love
Okay.
hearing the answers. I like hearing how writers feel about reading and different art, what we do. So number two, do you prefer reading books that are set in contemporary times or historicals or both?
Both, actually. And I do read a lot of history. I'm still struggling my way through Napoleon by Andrew Roberts for the last year, and we'll finally get through that, but probably more contemporary than historical.
Okay, very good. Do you prefer, this is about writing, do you prefer to write in the mornings or the evenings or some other time?
In the mornings, I used to. When I was more pressed for time before I was full time, I would do evening sessions and sometimes deep into the night. But now that I've kind of established a routine, it's something I do primarily in the mornings.
Yeah, that's nice when you can devote, whatever time you want to it. All right, back to a hard one. Would you rather watch a movie or a TV show tonight?
TV shows. That's one. There's a lot of bad things about all the streaming and all the channels and all that trying to keep track and paying for a million different services. But one of the great things is that so many series these days are more like novelizations. It can actually, 10 or 12 hours of a story as opposed to a 2-hour one. So I do like TV.
Yeah, TV's great right now, especially your shows too. So you have things to, we can all watch your show. You can find things anytime. And the last one of the day, if you could have dinner with any writer, living or dead, who would it be?
Mark Twain.
Kind of cool.
I'm a huge fan. That's one of the my mentor of growing up reading every single thing he wrote. More but I think I was more in love with his essays than his fiction books. With the exception of Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn, of course. But yeah, I think he's fascinating mind.
Yeah, I remember the first time I was an English major, so I had to read him. I think it was high school though, and I thought, oh, this is funny. I wasn't expecting it. I was expecting it to be funny. I'm like, this is.
And very acerbic toward the end. I mean, really some real tough stuff.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Yeah, the first one to pick that so far, so that's very good. So, book, I mean, this is not even, it's the 24th in the series, but there's, you've written a lot of books. Are you going out on tour for this book? What are we doing? Where can people find you, follow you, that kind of thing?
Sure, it's going to be kind of a, kind of more extensive tour since the COVID years. It's about 2 weeks. It's on my web. The tour stops are all on my website, which is cjbox.net. I'm going all over the country except the East Coast. Really popping around. I'm starting in Arizona and ending in Arizona at the Tucson Book Festival, and then Denver, St. Louis. Orange County, Houston. I know I'm leaving something out along there, but it's all on the website of all the tours.
Awesome. Well, you're gonna have a lot of people following you around because you've been, you know, now that you're out, everyone's back out again, and we can all see each other. And Tucson is gonna be live this year. There's a lot of people going. It's gonna be really fun as usual. So that'll be great.
It's
Oh,
a great
thank
book
you.
festival.
That's what I have to make it out there. I have a lot of friends going this time, so I've heard. Feels like it's the place to be, and I will not be there. So, but are you going? Are you thinking about BatcherCon again or not?
I went last year. I was a guest of honor. I'm not planning on it this year. I kind of trying to go every 2 or 3 years.
All right. Well, maybe you'll make it to the DC one in 2027.
Possibly.
Possibly. Well, thank you so much for being here. Enjoy the rest of your day and your tour. I know you're on a junket, so I will wish you luck. And everyone needs to run out and get all of the books. Bring your wallet. Definitely 3-inch teeth because it's awesome.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you.